va dégager. Il y a tous les joueurs de l'équipe de France sur le banc, avec notamment Mandanda, Areola, Benjamin Mendy, et qui sont là.
Hello and welcome to the Three Beards World Cup podcast. I am your host, Tom Miller, here with City James of Manchester City fandom and Dr. Pete of Tottenham fandom for one final World Cup episode before we move on to our EPL podcast. Pete, this was the best World Cup ever. We say it every episode. Wouldn't you agree?
Definitely the best World Cup ever. Just happy it wasn't another 0-0 draw the way the last two have been, the last World Cup requiring extra time to decide it. This one had a little bit of everything in the final, and just like the tournament did.
If you're a fan of own goals, you're a fan of this tournament. If you're a fan of set-piece goals, you're a fan of this tournament.
Alexi Lawless?
Who? Anyway, but I agree. Great tournament overall. Lots of excitement, lots of drama. Lots of rolling around on the ground by Neymar. Everything you could have wanted from an international tournament.
True. A lot of that. A lot of rolling around. You mentioned it all. A lot of own goals, a lot of penalties, a lot of set-piece goals. And I believe all of those were represented in this game, which is very fitting. Like Pete said, the first time we haven't had a 0-0 draw after 90 minutes since, 2006? This game had a lot of pace to it. It was really, really exciting, especially if you're a neutral fan.
You know, I was kind of a neutral in this one. I wanted Croatia to win because they're a small country. I think they played really well together as a team. But at the same time, I did want to see France win because I think they had the most talented team. And I think they deserved to win based on the draw they got and how they came through that draw.
I'm the same. I wanted Croatia to win just because that's a good underdog story. I didn't really have a horse in this race, but France are definitely deserving winners, and they worked their way through the hardest half of the bracket. And, I mean, in the knockout stages, really played the best soccer overall. They were a joy to watch.
Yeah, I would agree. I wanted Croatia to win just as like a good story kind of thing. And nobody really likes to watch a team that has all the talent win by like 5 goals in the final, especially a final like this, in a tournament like this, where everything's been really exciting. So many goals scored after the 90th minute. So many dramatic sequences between penalty kicks, VAR, not so many red cards, which is really terrific for me. I enjoy to see all the players on the field, and I don't think there were times really where red cards were merited, but a lot of controversy in this match and a lot of talking points, so let's get into it. In this one, you have pretty much the same starting lineups as you would have expected coming in. You have Pogba, Matuidi, and Kante in the middle, and I think that was a huge deal. And depending on how they played against Modric and Rakitic would kind of dictate the pace of the game. And James, in this one, I thought Croatia started really positively, especially for the first 20 minutes.
It was back and forth, and Croatia definitely had some great play leading up to it. And to the halftime whistle, I think they were still in the game. And I thought it was actually really important that Kante actually ended up getting a yellow card fairly early in the match. And I think that helped them. It kind of limited what Kante was able to do as he was trying to track the Croatian players out of midfield.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'd extend that 20 minutes out to halftime. And I think the amazing thing about Croatia to me is how many times they went down in the World Cup and just never fazed them. So against Denmark in the last 16, they scored 3 minutes after conceding the opening goal. Against Russia in the quarterfinal, they scored 8 minutes after conceding the opening goal. In England, they overturned a 1-0 deficit to win 2-1 in extra time. And in this one, you know, they were unlucky with an own goal after, I think, the first, 15 minutes, and came back, scored almost immediately. And actually, there was a 20-minute period where you thought that they might actually knock France out. And there's only been one other 20-minute period I can think of for France, which was during the beginning of the Belgium game when it looked like they might actually get knocked out of the tournament.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well, especially for the first 18, 20 minutes. That's why I was unfortunate when right around the 17th minute, Griezmann just flat out dove. I think he, you know, you guys were saying he might have lost his footing, and I just think that he knew the contact was coming, and he held his legs back when he lost the ball, and he dropped on the ground, and it was a dive. And from there, he bends a ball in. It's flicked in beautifully by Mandzukic. It's Augie, guys, and he scored in his first final ever.
I knew he was going to score in the final. This kid has had such an amazing tournament up to this point. There was no keeping him out.
Absolutely not. No way. You just knew he was going to score. You knew there was going to be an own goal. You knew there was going to be a penalty. Most penalties ever called in a World Cup, and it's not even close. So you knew those things were going to happen. You knew there was going to be VAR controversy.
And VAR has been so quiet in the knockout rounds.
Yeah, but VAR shows up in a big way in this one. But let's stick with the free kick bent in. Good ball in. And Mandzukic, who's been excellent for Croatia, scoring big goals for them, knocked England out, obviously, in extra time, scores again here. Great flick header, Pete.
Yeah, there were some problems with this play in regards to Croatia's defense. They were playing way too deep, and Subasic was rooted to his spot, which was a problem for a couple goals in this one. And he did not look like he was 100%. It's almost like he could not elevate off of his leg. I think he's got a hamstring injury.
Yeah, I agree.
But, you know, if that ball is coming off the other team's head, shouldn't he be able to react? It was just a flick off the top straight back. It wasn't, like, redirected that much. So why is he not even within 6 feet of it?
He did look really limited there. And on both of those later goals from France, he was cheating to the other side. Not on this header, but in the later goals, he did a little hop to his left before the shot came in. I think he's trying to get an early jump on it because he maybe doesn't have that reach that he would normally have.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd really say this is the goal where I noticed that he had had problems. I think this goal goes in anyways. I think it was a great header. And, you know, with the way timing works, you're expecting someone from the other team to be redirecting the ball, and it just didn't happen. I don't really think there's much he could have done about this goal. But the later goals, I think he absolutely should have gotten some kind of jump on, especially when both of them were very similar. And to not even end up on the ground in an attempted dive was very strange, Dr. Pete.
Yeah, and this was very poor from Mandzukic. You either have to let the ball go over your head, or you have to head it out. You can't skim the ball into your own net. I mean, that was terrible. He's a very, as we've seen in this tournament, he's a very experienced player, and that's not something I expect from an experienced player in the finals.
I mean, you have to compliment Croatia's resilience as 10 minutes later, and after good attacking play, they actually end up scoring. What a goal from Ivan Perisic. As the ball comes out to him, he bounces it to his left foot and then volleys the living crap out of it into the corner. What a rocket, James.
And he's had a great tournament, too, just fighting the entire time. This was a very, very nice goal, and he almost hit it out of its skin there, driving it past Lloris.
Brilliant goal.
Yeah, so 1-1 there, very deserved, and you know, there's so many incidents in this game that it's hard to pick a headline, you know what I mean? Like, the game, if you just isolate one or two of these goals, and if the score would have been 1-1 or 2-1, then there's so many different narratives that could have played out here. I mean, you have the first goal being an own goal, and imagine if that game finishes 1-0, then Mandzukic is like, you know, he's the GOAT, and they have all these problems with that. The poor guy loses a final, first time an own goal has ever been scored in a final. And then all of a sudden, this beautiful Perisic goal, if the game ends up being drawn, I mean, that's what you'd be talking about instead. But France, on the other hand, scores here 2-1 in the 38th minute on a penalty kick, and another talking point that can take a narrative in a different direction, guys. As a corner kick has been in, and Perisic doesn't reach for the ball, but his hand is out, and his hand, in my opinion, moves with the ball, and he hits him right in the hand. It's a handball, and I think that if he hadn't been near the goal, like maybe even like a more towards the sideline or more towards the edge of the 18, then maybe they wouldn't have called it, but because it was could have been seen as a way to block a goal, they absolutely called the penalty kick after VAR. James, your thoughts?
This gets called differently in every game I've ever seen it happen, and everyone always justifies the different call every time. You know, he's jumping up in the air, and yeah, his hands come down. You know, when you jump in the air, you don't keep your hands up in the air the entire time and then just, you know, land that way. You jump up in the air and your hands come down as you start to come down. when you view it in super slow motion, and I guess that's what VAR is for, it can look like his hand is tracking the ball. I don't know. I just found out today that he also plays for the Croatian national beach volleyball team. So that might have been his first instinct.
That's what the problem was.
You see, and that's why.
Ball. See, I told you he was tracking.
That's why they discourage people from playing multiple sports ever since Bo.
I could definitely see that.
I don't know. I don't think it should have been a penalty.
So I agree with James. This gets called in a million different ways, and there's so much subjectivity in the rule. And one of the issues is that when you're using VAR, every questionable handball call is going to look like a deliberate handball because you slow everything down so much that the ball is hitting the hand for like 2 seconds while you're watching it in slow motion. So if you're watching it like that, then you lose any sense of what happened in real time.
Right, how close these players were to one another when that happened.
Exactly, and to me, the problem is that, and Tom, I think you're right in that the way that they call it most of the time, that this is a handball, the way they interpret the rule. The problem I have is I think that they should be trying to call handballs much less because it impacts the game so much when you call a penalty there. You're basically giving him 80% of a goal because, you know, some guy moved his hand a little bit. That doesn't equal almost a goal for me, and it shouldn't change the game so much. And whatever you want to add on to their win expectancy for that, it's too much for me to call handballs that much. I think it should be like the end of an NBA game where there's fouls happening but they're not calling it because they know it's part of the game and they don't want the referees to essentially decide the game.
If you are like using VAR, then I mean you can determine what really is an egregious handball and what is kind of like it, if it's even close to not being on purpose or being an accident, then maybe you shouldn't call it. I mean, how many times have we seen a ref call, what do they call it, ball hand, not handball? You know, it hit his hand. His hand happened to be there.
I mean, it has to be absolutely deliberate, like the Colombian one where he stopped the ball from going the goal. Like that's right. Why you have the handball rule in effect, not for some ball that it looks like it's going to skip off some guy's head and some guy's moving his head down. To me, is just not worth changing the course of the final.
Yeah, so by rule, I believe this is a handball, which is what I said. But Pete, your thoughts on taking the rule in a different direction are interesting to me, because what if you called that inadvertent handball in the box? What if that became a new call and then you had an indirect free kick from there?
That would be an interesting little wrinkle. I'm not sure how it would work, but I think it'd be better than just giving them...
I think it'd be better than a penalty, yeah.
You could end up with some walls, like some guys in the wall that just get absolutely walloped with a ball. Just like
hit. And that's what we all want to see, right?
Well, I mean, you at least drive the chances of them scoring down a little bit and make it more interesting.
The chances of a punctured lung go through the roof, but the odds of a goal... an expected goal go down to like 30% or less, and you get some more creative free kicks. So I don't know. It's an idea, and I agree. You know, all the coverage that I read about from intelligent sports reporters were saying the exact same thing. They have no idea what the rule is saying. Every time a big decision comes up, they have no idea. And just like I think it was James said, every time one of these calls is made, yes, you can go you can create a thesis for why it was called correctly. But you could also go in the other direction. It's just, it's a poorly executed rule. It's a poorly written rule, and it needs to be addressed. I think we all agree on that.
Yeah, and one last thing. You know, if you're saying VAR for it, I mean, they're saying it has to be clear and obvious, right? Well, yes. The referee had to watch 7 or 8 slow motion replays, walk away from the screen, and then walk back to the screen to watch another 2 replays before reversing his original call. So how the hell is that clear and obvious if it takes him that long to figure it out?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, great point. I'd like to hear him answer it.
They probably won't do that. The first half ends 2-1 Croatia, or 2-1 France, and you'd have to say that Croatia should feel hard done there, guys. I mean, I thought they played really well in the first half, and France just, honestly, like, is that luck to you guys?
I mean, those are definitely two types of goals you don't want to be giving up in the World Cup final. I mean, a soft free kick off of a dive, and then an iffy penalty.
I mean, the soft free kick resulted in an own goal.
Right. You're giving up the soft free kick. I mean, that's a free kick you should never have to defend.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really unlucky for Croatia to be in that position, but I mean, that's how it goes sometimes.
here's the flip side in that Argentina-France game. Remember they went down to 2-1 mm-hmm. and they were very unlucky to not be beating Argentina. Not the same circumstances, but they obviously outplayed Argentina significantly and were down 2-1 going into the second half in that game.
True, but they also got a fortuitous penalty kick in the Australia game followed by a deflection goal.
Yeah, I'm just saying that, you know, the luck goes back and forth, and
yeah.
They definitely had some luck in the first half. There's no question about it.
If you're gonna come out and win a World Cup like this, I mean, you definitely need to have luck on your side, and they had that in the first half, I think.
Yeah. But that being said, I mean, they were the most talented team on paper anyways. It was just a matter of how they were going to play, and I think they played well. And to me, the golden ball winner comes off here in the 54th minute, Dr. Pete, and you and I couldn't believe it. I thought that N'Golo Kanté was the best player in the tournament, for one thing. And for two, I think he was the most valuable player in a match where you need defense. You're up 2-1. He's got a yellow card. He's a player that's used to playing with a yellow card, and the ref wasn't really giving out a lot of yellow cards, so I thought it was a poor decision.
It was an absolutely terrible decision. No one's going to second guess it because they ended up winning. They scored a goal, I think, 5 minutes later, so it was a moot point. Mm-hmm. But at that point in the game, you're up 2-1, and you subbed off the absolute heart of your defense, playing against the best midfield in the world. And I have no idea what he could possibly be thinking other than sort of playing to not lose the game. But can't remember the last time the best player was pulled off just because he had a yellow card. I mean, N'Golo Kanté is smart enough to know how to play with a yellow card. Mm-hmm. And yes, there's a risk there. If you get that red card, you know, your chances of winning go down significantly. But that, to me, is a risk that you take. And he is very lucky that that didn't come back to bite him. Because imagine if they lost that game. If Croatia scores, you know, 10 minutes later and it's 2-2 and they end up winning, he is going to get destroyed for that decision.
I don't know. I think you guys aren't giving Deschamps enough credit. I think I agree with you. It's weird to take a player like Kanté off. I don't agree that that's what you do if you're trying not to lose. You know, you'd want to clone Kanté 3 times and have him be your entire midfield, even if they're all on yellows, you know? So I think he was trying to change up the game. He saw the way the game was going, how Croatia were attacking, and he put in Nzonzi in there, and then France.
So you don't think it was because he was on a yellow card? Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't think it was because he was on a yellow card. That's super early. I think the decision's
even worse to me.
Yeah, I would agree.
You take off the best player in the f***ing tournament.
He did it to change up the tactics to counter what Croatia was doing, and it worked.
I don't agree with
that. I mean, France is like steamrolling.
I mean, they scored 5 minutes later and the game was over. But if they didn't score there, then, you know, it could have been a whole different ballgame.
Well, that's what subs and tactics are all about.
All right, guys, I want to end this conversation with just this, that in 18,000 minutes as a professional in club soccer, N'Golo Kanté has received 0 red cards and 1 double yellow in his career on 32 yellow cards.
And then maybe James is right and it wasn't for a second yellow. I just assumed there was no other possible reason that anybody would ever pull N'Golo Kanté off the field for any team.
Of course I'm right.
I still think that it was for the yellow. But anyway, you know, there's another thing that we didn't really talk about. We skipped over it pretty quickly. But Kylian Mbappe threw on net after burning Vito on the outside. And there was just like another gear to Kylian Mbappe on this one. He goes around the outside of him, gets in on net. A good save here by Subasic. We don't want to let that one go by as he did stop Mbappe. But then the substitute of N'Golo Kanté. And you're wondering which direction the game was going to go in. And about 5 minutes later, Pogba takes a shot from right at the 18 center, bounces back to him, and he hits it with his left foot. James, we talked about Subasic possibly being injured. And to me, this is the goal that indicated that he had almost no mobility.
They showed one angle on this replay from like behind Pogba. And for that second shot, it did look like he was unsighted as well. So in that context, when I first saw it, I was like, okay, he was trying to get sight on the ball. He took his step to the left to not cheat, but to get a sight on it and put him out of position, and he was frozen once the shot came in. But in the context of the second goal that would be scored in the second half, yeah, his mobility was affected, and he was trying to cheat the whole game to where he thought the shot was going to go so he could get there. I think his mobility was severely affected.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, but I want to go back to Pogba on this play, because it was really brilliant. The ball he played through to Mbappe, and he continued his run. I think it was like a 50 or 60 yard run.
I was hoping we wouldn't have to talk about that.
That he made going into the box, and you know, his first shot got blocked, stayed with it, and he scored the first goal in the World Cup finals outside the box since 1982. So not an easy thing to do. It helps if the goalie is slightly injured. But he's also the first Manchester United player, James, to score in a World Cup final. I know that's going to get you pretty excited.
That makes sense.
Are there any Manchester City players in this game?
Mendy didn't come on.
I hate you. Yeah, I mean, so Pogba scores here. I still think that the goalie had major problems, and I think that's on the manager for not picking that up. And this was a good shot, and maybe he was a little bit screened, but these guys' reactions, the goalies that they're at the level that they're at, they can react and do something. The fact that he was stone-footed on two goals in a row, like no dive, nothing, it was like he was afraid to dive.
I'm never a fan of the no dive, fall down backwards look. To me, that's never a good look for any player.
Yeah, and would you guys agree that this goal, and probably the next one as well, eliminated his shot at the Golden Gloves?
Yeah, I mean, if you think of how many reaction saves Pickford had, you think that he probably would have saved all of those shots today, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I just think Subasic, other than his penalty kick shootouts, after that he just looked like a different goalkeeper, and it didn't affect him that much in the England game, but definitely in this one he did not look like he was 100%.
So Pogba scores 3-1 in the 59th minute, and then just 6 minutes later, another goal, this time by Kylian Mbappe from distance, right around center, about 23 yards out. He just kind of crossed his foot over the ball and hit a little beeliner that, honestly, it didn't hit side netting or the post or anything. It's just Subasic, no chance again. I mean, we can repeat the same conversation, right, guys?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all the same.
Stone-footed, fell over backwards again.
Yeah, and I think that was the big indicator to me that you brought an injured goalie onto the pitch at a final. Whether or not he was honest with his manager is kind of irrelevant, because you need to know. You need to know.
I don't know who their backup is, but he might not be World Cup final material either.
I mean, the goalie can't dive. Like, your goalie can't dive. So I don't know how 30% of a goalie, how there could be a goalie that's worse than that. Like,
could have Caballero.
That's true.
That was really mean.
Caballero is a negative goal differential goalkeeper. That's true. That's very true. So 4-1 here.
Hold on a second. He didn't even make the worst goalkeeping gaffe of the game, though.
No, he
that's
didn't.
The best part.
That's what we're going to get to.
Yeah.
4-1. And then 4 minutes later, I brought it up earlier, guys. There's so many different narratives. So if each one of these goals had been the only goal of the game, they would have fantastic narratives, right, in World Cup lore. If France had lost this game 1-0 after Hugo Lloris, who's almost in his own six, tries to tap the ball past Mandzukic, doesn't even come close, and Mandzukic, he scores off of the tackle.
Yeah, he tackled.
That's how
it
close that he was to the goal. Can you imagine if France lost this game 1-0?
That would have been an amazing story.
Like, how do you come back from that if you're Lloris? Ever?
I would have been very concerned about the rest of his career at Tottenham if he had lost the World Cup. I'm still concerned even though he won.
Yeah. I mean, that's got to shake your confidence a little bit.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he had a great year the year before last for us, but last year he made a lot of dumb mistakes. Like, he's a very good shot stopper, usually solid when he comes off his line, but his decision making is definitely a weak point for him, and it showed through here. I mean, Mandzukic wasn't even at full stretch or like sliding.
Nope.
It was shocking.
Yeah.
Just terrible.
In a World Cup final.
In a
I mean,
World
you're
Cup
so
final.
Lucky that you're up 4-1 in that situation. I was astounded by it, and I just couldn't help thinking, like, okay, there goes another guy who was trying to win the Golden Gloves. That's out the door now. You gave away a goal in the World Cup final. Like,
was this worse than Karius's gaffe in the Champs League? I think that affected the game more, obviously, but just on pure technicality.
I think it's worse because it was 100% on him. At least in the Champions League final with Karius, Gareth Bale hit a ball like 80 miles per hour.
Not that one.
No, the other one, Thomas.
Yeah, the other one. When he rolled it out in front of That's in front of Benzema. About. Yeah, that one's worse because he had the ball in his hands. He could have chosen the anything with it.
That's true. I'll give you that. All
but
right.
Benzema had to have a heads up play to do it. Mandzukic wasn't really that heads up. So
he was. I mean, that one's worse. Karius is worse. This one's bad, and he should feel bad about himself.
Mandzukic, how does he not win man of the match with two goals in this one, guys? I mean. One against,
I saw all these weird stats about him scoring in multiple finals, you know, because he scored the Champions League final. I was like, these are stupid stats.
I think he's the first player to ever score an own goal in a World Cup final.
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
So Hugo Lloris off the hook here as in the biggest goalkeeping gaffe in World Cup final history. Just no one's going to talk about it. No one's going to remember it. But that's why I said earlier we should isolate each goal and imagine them as the game winner because they have so many talking points on them. But as it were, it only made it 4-2. And I thought France pretty much cleaned up after that. No real problems. They brought on Fekir and he had a decent shot. Rakitic had a shot late. But really, guys, no threat from there, right?
Yeah, I think the scariest thing about the victory for them is that it never seemed like France had actually played their best throughout this tournament. I mean, like we talked about, there were still only a couple of 20-minute periods throughout the tournament where you thought they might get knocked out. So, I mean, it's scary to think what they could be capable of going forward. I mean, could this be a dynasty like we saw with Spain when they won the World Cup and a couple of Euros?
They definitely have that talent. And I mean, these players are young. They'll have another World Cup cycle for most of them here. I think so. They're not a club team, but they're going to get a lot more time with each other coming up. I think it's going to be pretty scary.
You know, they got 15 other guys that are, you know, obviously want to crack the first team that are exceptional players. So the amount of competition that they're going to have to make that Euro 2020 squad is going to be unbelievable.
Dembele didn't even get on the field.
Yeah,
I mean, he got like one sub appearance or something. Yeah.
I think they're the third youngest team in the tournament. Right there with England and Nigeria, I believe, as the youngest, and England second, France is third. And the amount of talent they had is exactly right. I mean, I think that, you know, you look at Giroud in this, and we're not really going to talk about him having a poor World Cup because he had a valuable role, I guess. But, I mean, the guy scored 0 goals in 7 games for a team that won the World Cup and scored, I think, 14 goals.
Like, I don't think he had a shot on target, did he?
He had no shots on target.
I thought he had one. They gave him one, I thought.
They felt bad for him?
Oh, I guess the stat was like in 560-some minutes or something like that.
Yeah, I think he had one real early in the tournament. But it's exactly right. I mean, what would we be saying about Giroud if they had lost here? I mean, the guy had 0 goals in 7 matches as a number 9 on the French national team.
Better or worse than Jesus?
To me, better because he was better in build-up, and Jesus is on the end of the Brazilian attack, which created the most chances in the tournament and has always fed their number nines. He was not playing a holding nine role. He was not playing a target man. They weren't bouncing balls into his head and having him flick them on. He was a part of the attack in front of the goal. So but we'll get into that as well. And I'm not going to give you a chance to rebuttal because we already did. We already did that argument, so we're not going to talk about this again. All right, Golden Ball goes to Luka Modric. I do want to talk about the second and third place for Golden Ball. Eden Hazard and Antoine Griezmann. No Mbappe in sight. Thoughts, James?
I would just say probably it's because they gave him the Young Player Award. That's why he's not on that list to me. But I think Hazard being on there instead of De Bruyne is more egregious.
Yeah, I feel like maybe I watched a different tournament. I thought Hazard was fine, but I didn't think he made a difference in the matches like De Bruyne did. I mean, think about how many assists De Bruyne could have had in that third place match against England if Lukaku had decided to score.
Well, it's like 5 or 6 times you're sitting there saying, that's an amazing pass from De Bruyne.
Exactly.
Per game.
Not to mention that absolute rocket that knocked Brazil out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think people love Hazard because he dribbles around like crazy, but he was not the best player on Belgium.
I don't think so either.
Let alone the second best player in the tournament. Give me a break.
I thought that was a really strange decision. And I was reading other pundits. I think you're right, Pete. I think people just like his style of play. I know he's a good player. He is. But I didn't think that he had an amazing tournament. Did he have any wonder goals? I don't think so. He scored some penalty kicks. But De Bruyne had a wonder goal and was at the heart of everything that Belgium did that was good. And the only time that they really faltered was when he got shut down by three defensive midfielders. What else can you say? I thought that De Bruyne belonged on that list. It's a good segue to the World 11 to me. I put together my own list. I'll go across it for you guys. I actually picked a formation of a 3-4-3 because, ooh, Dr. Pete, the defense in this World Cup sucked.
Defense was nowhere to be found, but it made for some really entertaining matches, that's for sure.
I think there were some good individual performances. I don't think team defenses were anywhere near a good standard.
A defender that you think played well, to me, it had to be a minimum of like 4 or 5 games in the tournament. That was really, really difficult for me to find. And even the ones I did find, a lot of times they had an own goal.
Yeah.
So it was difficult. We'll start in goal and move forward because I think that's a more interesting way to do it. A lot of options here, but Lloris and Subasic, to me, were knocked out by their play in the final. Like, disastrous plays in the final.
Agreed. That
would have lost them a game in almost any other year in the World Cup. So I believe that they eliminated themselves. And then it was between Courtois and Pickford. And Courtois had more saves, but I thought Pickford had more dynamic saves and was a bigger role in his team's ascendancy in this World Cup.
Yeah, I think it was close between Pickford and Courtois. I think Pickford had more saves, which are just incredible. I think he probably had the save of the tournament on that mini-air volley. I mean, obviously that game didn't matter, but still, yeah, an incredible save. And he made a save in England's PK shootout and helped get them through, which they've never done before. So I think he was really probably a little bit better than Courtois to me.
I'd give it to Pickford too. I'm okay with that because I think Courtois also had a much more stable defense in front of him, which helped him out immensely. And I agree with everything Pete said. Pickford made some outstanding saves.
And Courtois is also the biggest douchebag of the tournament.
Yeah.
Just ran his mouth,
yeah,
the whole tournament.
Pickford's too short.
I like that he said Pickford is too short, and then he clarified his statement. He's like, no, I didn't say Pickford is too short. I said that I am taller than him, and he is shorter than me.
Which is a fact, and you can't take that away from me.
Oh,
and then he's talking about how France didn't play well, because they played too much defense.
Get
out of here, man. Well, take his golden gloves away, Tom.
Yeah,
I won't. I can't. I would if I could. But he, after the tournament, also just like Hazard said, well, you guys know where I want to go, winkety wink wink. I would like to be transferred out of central London for the blue team and go to somewhere in Spain like Madrid for a white team, winkety wink wink.
He started using their Pro Evolution Soccer names. London Blue.
Yeah. And Royal Madrid.
Yeah.
Tough tournament for Chelsea fans, man.
Yeah, yeah. And then we'll get into that with the EPL podcast because Conte, their manager leaving, how he left and how he had to manage like 3 or 4 preseason sessions before he got fired.
Amazing.
Was incredible. We'll definitely get into that with our EPL podcast. But all right, let's move to the defense. I had a hard time finding 3 players, but I think Trippier, without a doubt, another England player here. Trippier, without a doubt, the best outside back for any club or any nation, I think. Just the amount of balls bent in and then capped by a magical moment with him scoring. And I think that kind of made the difference. And not scoring an own goal, James, I think that's a big deal.
Big deal, for sure, for defenders in this tournament. I think he definitely had a great game, and he put in a lot of great crosses, which not a lot of them got finished off.
No.
I actually, if we're talking about right backs, I would actually have Pavard from the French team ahead of him in the lineup here. Really great tournament throughout, and great defender on the World Cup winning team.
Kills me to say this, because I love Trippier, and I think he had a coming out party in this one, but I think James is right. That goal that Pavard had was even better than Trippier's free kick. Pavard was one of the only players in the France squad that no one knew his name coming in. And it was rare that we saw him make mistakes. And he faced some very good offensive threats, including Croatia today. And how often do you remember saying, oh, that new guy just got skinned? You know, it just did not happen very much. So
he was playing in like the second tier in Germany 2 years ago or something
like that. Just barely above Trippier.
I see what you guys are saying. I just think that Pavard was like the fourth best defensive player, maybe, on the French team. And Trippier was sound defensively, but had a large role in every single English win, in every single game they played. So that's why I would put him over Pavard. But absolutely, that exclamation point goal certainly puts him in the running.
Manchester City youth product.
Yeah, maybe they should have kept him. Then they went to buy a 60 million pound defender every 3 months.
Or win the league.
Or win the league. Varane, for me, the best center back in the tournament, maybe because he didn't score an own goal. He scored a big goal, and I thought he was commanding. There weren't that many defenders in this tournament that were commanding, and he was excellent.
Yeah, he looked like a classic center back that teams just couldn't get through. He won almost every aerial battle, and he was really impressive. I don't watch much of La Liga. I think he was in and out of the squad this year, but I have to imagine that he's going to be part of their defense for a long time to come.
I also agree with Varane. No argument. I mean, he was stable the entire time, and not just stable, but stood out. With some great performances, and Real Madrid is very lucky to have him.
So it's very difficult to find a third defensive player in this tournament, but guys, I'm going to go with Demagoge Vida, the man with the hair, the Croatian center back. He fits all the things we just said, had a very strong tournament, kind of came out of nowhere, scored a big goal, and overall I thought he played very, very well. James, your thoughts on Vida?
Yeah, played his heart out, scored a very important goal, and most importantly, he is a center back on a World Cup finalist team, not named Lovren.
Lovren said he brought his team to a World Cup final, his nation to a World Cup final.
He also said he was the best defender in the world.
Yes, yes, because he said he had brought his nation to a World Cup final and his club team to a Champions League final. So he said people don't know what they're talking about. I'm glad he thinks that, and I hope he continues to play because he keeps Liverpool in fourth place. So besides Vida, anybody else you guys want to put in the defenders? I honestly could find an argument against all the other defenders, so I didn't choose anybody else.
The only other one I would say is Godin. And unfortunately, Uruguay ran into France pretty early. If he had gone later in the tournament, and I think that Uruguay's defense was almost as good as France's, probably the second best in the tournament, but Uruguay didn't have the offensive firepower that France did, obviously.
I also liked that the left back from Uruguay looked Laxalt. Yeah, mm-hmm. Laxalt. I would agree with you, and probably doesn't make the tournament best list, but I thought he had a good performance. And I also like Mina from the Colombian team. He had 3 goals from center back, really, really great player. But again, that's more of an individual. The defense on Colombia wasn't good enough to have a player come out of it.
Yeah, another player worth mentioning again on that Uruguay team is Jimenez, the other mm-hmm. Atletico Madrid defender. I think he had an excellent tournament as well. It's just, like you guys said, they needed Cavani to be there to provide a little bit of balance in the team. They didn't have it. But for me, that's the 3 defenders I'd pick. I had a little bit of a shout for John Stones. I think he played really well, and he got robbed of a couple goals, actually. The good defensive play on the line or great saves or something like that. I thought Stones was excellent for England up until he allowed the goal mm-hmm. that got them knocked out of the tournament. Yeah. And in the same way, Harry Maguire scores a big goal in this tournament and wins a lot of aerial battles, but falls asleep on that last play. And I think, frankly, like they're linking him to all these big teams. I think that defensively, with his positioning, I don't think he's very good at that, and I think that he's a lot of holes in his game. So I don't think I would add him to this lineup.
We'll see coming up in the next season. We'll see how he does. It's going to be a big season for him.
Yeah,
it is. It is. I mean, he's clearly has a giant head and can win head balls. So we'll see if that translates to goals. Let's move to the midfield here. We'll go with the easiest one first. Luka Modric, talisman, golden ball winner, heart and soul of Croatia, and just clinical in a fine display in probably his last World Cup. But with his skills, you never know how they are going to erode, because it's not like he's sprinting and dribbling past people with speed. He's clinical, and he's technically gifted. So, guys, anything to say on Modric?
No. He's in.
No, I think he was terrific, and as we talked about before, I think this has elevated him into the top 3 or 4 for Ballon d'Or, and apparently some people don't care about that, but some of us do.
He's got a shot. He's got a shot. I think Neymar took a beating. His reputation did in this tournament, and I was very surprised by that. We'll get into it, though, as we move to the forwards. To me, Conte, we've discussed his impact on this team throughout the tournament. Conte was the heart and soul of a very defensive-minded French team that strangled out Kevin De Bruyne and strangled out almost every team they faced. So Conte for me.
Agree. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I would have probably subbed him out in the 60th minute because I don't think he played that well in this tournament and he was a defensive liability.
Well, Deschamps subbed him out in the 53rd minute.
He was absolutely brilliant in this tournament. I think he might be France's most irreplaceable player.
Okay. Next player over, Kevin De Bruyne. We already discussed it. The amount of times that you said in this World Cup, wow, what a ball. Had his goal, wasn't even the penalty kick taker, or we'd be talking about him in a different way as well if he had been taking penalty kicks. Uh-huh. So I think that Kevin De Bruyne, to me, probably the best attacking midfielder in this tournament.
Definitely, I think, the most complete. I mean, there are players, like you say, a lot of people are putting Hazard up there because he dribbles around. He's got great dribbling and making incisive runs into the box. But I think De Bruyne was the metronome for that Belgium midfield. Just insane range of passing, and also chipped in with a really important goal as well. So he was first name on the team sheet for me.
And don't forget that Roberto Martinez has been playing him as a defensive midfielder for like 2 years.
Yeah.
So for some reason, you know,
I have Roberto Martinez as my coach of the tournament, actually.
But De Bruyne did that despite being out of position for almost half of this tournament. And he was just unbelievable. I agree. He was the best offensive midfielder. And I think that's kind of what I expected after watching him at Man City, to be honest with you. He's unbelievable.
Yeah, he almost was stunted by Roberto Martinez playing him as a deep defensive midfielder, not even coming forward. So KDB there, and then this one I know James won't like, but Paul Pogba, you had written in this match right around the 50th minute or so that Paul Pogba was invisible in all caps, and then he showed up and scored. I didn't think he was invisible then, and I didn't think he was invisible after. What do you have to say, James?
He definitely showed up in the second half of this game, but I don't think he was a player of the tournament. I mean, there's so much more of this tournament than the last game. But I see that's why you put four midfielders in now.
Yes, so I could fit in Pogba. I thought that he was dynamic in the games that he was asked to be dynamic in and defensive in the games that he was asked to be defensive in. And he was superb in all those roles. And I have an up-and-down relationship with Pogba, even as a Manchester United player. But I think in this tournament, he did everything that was asked. He scored in the final. He had an assist. He did just about everything you can think of overall in the tournament. They took away a goal against Australia that had a deflection in it and gave it an own goal, but I think that was his goal as well. And I think overall, you know, he played extremely well and imposed himself on every single match.
Yeah, I agree with it. I think that the players around him certainly helped elevate his play during this tournament. It took a lot of some of the focus off him. You know, when he came into Man U, he was making so much money, and they sort of expected him to be this incredible attacking midfielder, and that's
not what he is.
It's not quite his game. The way he plays for the France team is much more suited to his strengths, and it definitely shone through in this tournament.
Yeah, and I don't want to get James started again on how Jose Mourinho feels or what kind of emotions it evokes when Pogba plays disciplined
soccer. Was this a disciplined game? Because
we lost some kids with that.
Yeah, someone go check on Mourinho.
So Pogba is my other midfielder here, and then we'll move to the front line. Mbappe ripped apart Argentina. Also, kind of disappeared in it. What was it? The Belgium game he disappeared in, where he didn't do much. He had some games where in the group stages as well, where he didn't play particularly well, and I would have been against him winning the golden ball for that reason. I still think he should have been in the top three, and I think that this is his arrival on the big stage, and as Stu Holden said, I mean, this is him here. He's going to be the next global superstar, and if Stu Holden can tell me that, then I know that it must be true, guys. So anything you want to add to that?
Stu Holden is on the verge of joining Alexi Lalas in my zone where I just can't hear anything that they say, but he was right. Mbappe is here. He's there doing what he's doing.
Yeah, I think he put the icing on the cake in this one. And it's weird to say this, but Neymar is probably not the best talent on his club team.
PSG.
Mm-hmm. That's why Israel is going to have to leave again.
I think it eventually one of those. One of those two in the next year or two, it's just not going to work where there's too much star power there, in my opinion. But back to his performance, you know, 4 goals. He also created that penalty kick. So if he was taking penalty kicks, he's got 5. And he did have, you know, a couple of games where he disappeared, but he single-handedly destroyed Argentina. And in this one, he finished off the game and almost had another one. I mean, teams are just so terrified of his pace that it completely changes the way that they decide to play defense. So I think he was the best forward in the tournament, hands down.
I think that's an easy one for us to take. All right, the next one will not be. Harry Kane, for me, the best number 9 in the tournament. And the reason I say that, it's very simple. 6 goals. And I know he had 3 penalty kicks and a deflected goal. But you still have to score them. And he scored 2 more goals than any other forward in the tournament. James, I'll let you have the first shot because I know you don't agree.
If you want to look at it by the stats, then there's no question he's in. I don't think that he played the best out of any striker in the tournament. I actually wanted to give it to Lukaku, or I mean, we're doing 3 up top. I would put Lukaku in that number 9 position. I don't think Harry Kane offered enough to the team in this tournament. Honestly, the misses at the end kind of it hurt him in my eyes.
I love Harry Kane, Thomas. You know this, but he was not the best striker in the tournament for me. He, especially after watching the way he can play. And the fact that...
That makes a difference.
Yeah, I mean, to me, he was playing at somewhere around 75-80% of how good he normally plays on an everyday basis. And that definitely makes a difference. I think there's no question that he made a contribution. The PKs are tougher than you think to score 3 of those. But at the end of the day, I think Mario Mandzukic did much more for his team. Other than his bad own goal today. But he had some big goals. He played terrific throughout the tournament. He was running balls down all over the place, pressuring, played all those overtime games. To me, he just passed the eyeball test better than anybody else. Lukaku was great. It would have been awesome to see him play in an actual final. I think that would have made a difference for him making it to the final 11.
Yeah, I just think that even though he did score 3 penalty kicks, you still have to score them. So to me, that's a huge deal. And yes, he did kind of die, and as England died against Belgium for one thing, it's a third place game, but he didn't do anything at all in that match. But in the Croatia match, that's where I think a dynamic player should be front and center, and I think he looked out of gas. But he was a huge reason that they got where they got. The Tunisia goals, the Sweden penalty kick. I think that it's a big deal. And 6 goals against Romelu Lukaku's 4. I just don't think there was that much good forward play. I think that's more indicative than anything else. And I think for me, Lukaku, 2 less goals and not playing well against France. You know, the tiebreaker came down to who had more goals. But really, I didn't think there was very good pure number 9 play in this tournament.
It was more about wide forwards this tournament, I think. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, so moving to the left wing spot, left forward spot, Ronaldo. He had 4 goals, had the best individual performance, and is one of only maybe 2 or 3 players in this tournament that single-handedly brought his team points in a match. And to me, that performance against Spain is one of the greatest in World Cup history, the hat trick there. I thought Portugal was poor and shouldn't have gotten through, and without Ronaldo, they probably finished last in the tournament. I know you guys aren't going to agree with this one, but I'll let you have at it first.
Yeah, I would reluctantly agree with putting him on there. I mean, I think that game against Spain, like you said, it's really hard when guys don't make it that far in the tournament and you don't have enough games to evaluate them. I mean, I could certainly see some other players in there.
I had Griezmann there, who, by the way, won man of the match in the final.
I wasn't putting him outside on the left, but I was going to say that Griezmann needs to be on your squad somewhere.
Yeah. I have been forward.
In that case, definitely Griezmann over Ronaldo.
Yeah.
If you're doing just forwards.
Well, Griezmann had 4 goals, I think, and 3 of them were penalty kicks.
2 assists as well.
Yeah, Ronaldo had 4 goals, 1 penalty kick that he earned. I just feel like, honestly, that game against Spain, I think that's World Cup lore. And I think that Portugal was bad. and that he's the only reason they move forward. But Griezmann, absolutely, it's just to me that hat trick was the single best performance of the tournament.
I mean, when they needed Ronaldo in the knockout stages, where was he? Not scoring goals.
There's just too many players around him when Portugal is so poor. I think that was the biggest indicator of how poor his team was and why his game against Spain single-handedly, because they had no business being in that match, was the biggest difference. But I could also see Griezmann for sure. You could easily talk me into Griezmann. It's just that one match really stood out to me. And also, you know, beyond Griezmann, Neymar was excellent in the World Cup, right? If you were to take out the theatrics, he set up the most key chances through the matches that he had played, and he had the most goal-scoring opportunities, and I believe he had 12 shots on target in 12 shots. So that's pretty phenomenal. On the other side of that, the reason I didn't put him on here is because I believe that he became such a distraction to his team and such a distraction to referees that it actually hurt his team progressing.
Yeah, I have two problems with putting Neymar on there. Actually, three problems. One is that he didn't score many goals. Number two, he didn't come up with the goal that his team needed when there was a chance that they weren't going to advance. And number three, he dove around all over the place and created a complete distraction for the rest of his team going into that Belgium game. That's all everybody was talking about, was him diving around all over the place and being on the ground for 14 minutes.
He was a total distraction. It was a total circus. People were making fun of him across the entire global social media sphere. It was just so over the top.
There were old ladies making fun of him.
Yeah. I think at one point he realized how bad it had gotten because he just started taking it seriously. And I was like, okay, this looks like a Neymar who wants to win. He's going out and playing hard and he's not rolling around a lot. And that was by that time, it was already a little bit too late. I definitely wouldn't put him on the tournament best team, even though he did have some good games, absolutely, and did play well in a lot of key passages. He wasn't there when it mattered, and he was a sideshow for most of the games.
Yeah, I'm a big believer that he sunk the Brazilian national team front and center, and they expected him to play the best soccer in the tournament, which he came really close to doing, but everything else negated all the good work that he did. He wasn't going to get calls later. He wasn't going to, you know, maybe in another tournament where another player gets stepped on by the sideline, if he doesn't like flail around like his leg just got broken. And we have super slow-mo now, and VAR, the ref can actually go back and watch.
Yeah.
Like, you should be retroactively booked for that, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, it's the Rivaldo thing all over again, when they chip the ball at Rivaldo in the corner,
yeah,
and hit his shin guard, and he drops on his face. Like,
if VAR puts an end to this stuff, I will totally reverse my decision or my hesitancy in accepting it. I will take it fully on board if we don't have to see any of this stuff anymore. It's embarrassing.
A couple other players to mention. Mandzukic, guys, he had some big goals. One against England, obviously. One against his own team, obviously.
He fought nonstop every game he was in, and every game for Croatia in the knockout stage was long and hard, and he fought the whole time. He definitely put in a great performance. It's a shame that he had to score on his own team.
Yeah, Perisic too. I think Perisic, same reasons, honestly, scored some big goals and, you know, had a big impact on the tournament. Yeah, so I think we pretty much round the team out there. Is there anybody else you guys want to add to this?
I'd like to put some Fox commentators on there, mainly Tony Meola.
Tony Meola.
poor Derek Ray, man. He's with this whole crew of just substandard commentators.
Can't wait for NBC commentators to come back in August.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be...
Yeah, for sure. A disappointing World Cup from the commentator standpoint. But hopefully it'll get better. Although Fox has the rights for 2022, so maybe it won't.
Sorry. Well, that'll be an interesting one. I want to see who they have on the ground in Qatar for those games. Because that is going to be very, very... There's going to be drama there.
They didn't send that many people to Russia anyways when they found out the U.S. hadn't made it.
Yeah.
They said they lost 10 million viewers per U.S. game. So,
damn.
Wow.
They took a big beating there. $600 million well spent, ? So,
oops.
Did that include the 2022?
Yes, they get both 2018 and 2022. They sell it as a package deal.
Nah, they'll make it up.
We'll be back in 2022.
We'll be back.
Yeah, we'll be back in a big way.
We'll definitely be back in 26.
Yeah, that's true, unless they decide for the first time ever not to let the host.
Canada will also be back.
Yeah.
That's true, Canada will be in there. All right, so, guys, easy one for you. Manager of the tournament, and I believe we all would agree that Zlatko Delic was the manager of the tournament for Croatia. Pete?
Agree.
Yeah.
No question.
It's got to be.
Despite a late Bruce Arena bid, we stick with Dalich here.
That was a write-in ballot. From Bruce Arena.
Well, if you read his book, you'd understand how that could be possible, how he could possibly put his own name in there, because he said that while taking responsibility, it's everyone else's fault. Yeah. So, yeah.
I can guarantee you this is the only World Cup podcast that has mentioned Bruce Arena in their last episode.
And that's why people listen.
Yeah, that's true. Draw him in. But yeah, Dalic basically taking this Croatian team that had so much going on behind the scenes, from firing managers during qualification to a big trial at the very heart of their country's sports legends. You know, Lovren was in there, and of course Modric is in there too, in a trial about corruption from an agent. It wasn't, you know, doping or anything like that. A lot of people thought that Modric and Lovren sided with the corrupt instead of coming out and saying, yeah, these guys are running the show here and we're not going to take it anymore. They actually came out with statements contrary to their original statements, statements that basically were in line with two guys that were scared of what would happen if they came out against a corrupt agent in a corrupt system. So a lot of Croatia was split and indifferent going into this World Cup. So Zlatko Dalic gets a lot of credit for bringing them together.
They also had that guy that refused to be a sub, wouldn't go on, and got sent home out of the squad. So.
Yeah, that's incredible. How does he feel?
Probably not great, but then they didn't win.
Does he get a medal? No.
I mean, he does.
I think they can decide to give him one or not.
But they may not give him one, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the FA can decide. But, you know, I was reading about how Croatia's FA is really entwined with their politics over there. And for me, that makes it really, really difficult to move forward, and just gives the players...
It's only going
to
get worse now.
And Dalic, yeah. Give the players and Dalic more of a difficult task, and, you know, playing three extra time matches in a row in the knockout stages is absolutely brutal. So all the credit to Dalic for getting through that.
Yeah.
All right, last one for you guys here. Golden Ball winners. I've already said it was Conte, and I gave my reasons for it. James, your Golden Ball winner that is the best player in the World Cup tournament.
Yeah, I they gave it to the right guy. They gave it to Modric, and I can't argue with it.
Yeah, I'd say Modric and Conte was a close second for me.
Yeah, I think that it was really close. I just think that Conte, up until his sub in the 54th minute, was just a shade more impactful and more instrumental in beating better teams than Croatia. It was very close. You know, one thing or another, it's close. And I think the tiebreaker is that they won the tournament. So that would be it for the Golden Ball. Anything else you guys want to add to the 2018 World Cup beyond Agi's dominance?
Yeah, I'll say this is an incredible tournament, and not having the U.S. in there, I was worried that I wasn't going to be quite as interested, but it was kind of the opposite, because I was able to focus on all the other teams, and there was so many interesting things that happened throughout the World Cup. I think overall we were concerned about VAR. I think that they did a pretty good job considering,
yeah, I agree,
that it was thrown in at the last minute. There weren't any complete disasters. Obviously there was a controversy in the finals, but I'll tell you, I am really excited for Euro 2020, because you had four European teams in the semifinals of the World Cup. You have Spain, Germany, and Italy, who are going to be mad as hornets,
yep,
going into 2020. You'll have a Netherlands team that'll be looking for blood as well. So I can't wait until Euro 2020. It's going to be incredible.
James, anything to add?
I'm one of those people that when the international breaks are coming up, I dread it, because it's so boring. I don't want to watch any of these international friendlies. You know, they're all meaningless and stupid. But this was not. And this was a great remedy for that boring old international soccer that we've had to put up with. Even the last Euros, I didn't think was that great. But I agree. I'm all on board for the next Euro tournament. This was an amazing World Cup. So much to talk about. So much happened. So many great goals. And I think it'll probably go down as one of the, you know, top five tournament for the World Cup. I'm sad it's over.
As am I, and I'm going to, like I said, have some really bad withdrawal. I was looking into watching maybe some indoor games in the area, like Baltimore Blast. You guys can come and check it out with me.
They play at Towson University now.
Yeah, so we can get there in a hurry. But we want to thank everybody for joining us throughout this tournament and listening to the three of us and Ken just be completely ridiculous. We have our EPL podcast that we'll be going through. We'll probably start around early August, like August 5th. We have a blast with that podcast. We talk about all the English matches, and we get all the insight that you could possibly ask for. You don't have to look at Roy Keane, James. You don't have to listen to old players, Rio Ferdinand, throwing in their two cents.
Back in my
day. I don't need to hear that. I don't need to hear it. Although, I do like Roy Keane because everything he says is either zero or 100. There's no in-between for him. And he's always on the edge of getting in a fist fight.
I actually like set. Roy Keane.
Yeah. Not so much for his insight. But all right, we thank all of you from all the countries, from all the states. And we appreciate you guys listening in.
Except
us.
North Dakota.
North Dakota, we're mad at you. But Three Beards EPL podcast will be in full flight a week before the season starts. We will review all the transfer dealings because, Dr. Pete, the transfer window closes early this year, and there's a lot of business left to be done.
Absolutely. You've only got 3 weeks to get all of your teams in order. I mean, it's going to be fast and furious. Even though we're taking time off, we're still going to be reading the transfer rumors, which are going to be coming in thick and heavy.
So thanks again, everybody. This is Tom Miller for James Lewis and Dr. Pete, as well as Ken Lee, signing off from the Three Beards World Cup 2018 podcast, and we'll see you in the EPL. Oof.
8 years after Russia was awarded this event, the dream finally becomes a reality. Oh, what a goal that is! Fantastic free kick! Oh, what a shot! What a hit from miles out! Messi is denied! The small nation stands tall! Sensational goal! South Korea have scored! Can you believe it? They can't make it count! 2-0, that is it! Germany are going home from this World Cup! We are moving now towards the sharp end. Oh, how about that? Mbappe's got another one! Cavani, brilliant!
And we will go to penalties. And he's done it! And England win on penalties! It is Russia's party and the party goes on!
Oh, can you believe it? Fabulous comeback!
Only 8 now remain in Russia. Griezmann. Hugged it towards goal and in by Rafael Varane.
De Bruyne, 2-0. The favourites have gone.
Up to the head of Dele Alli.
Penalties again. Fernandes has dragged it horribly wide. Rakitic.
Two teams have been reduced to 4. Griezmann with the corner, kicking up TT! And it is over!
Is Kieran Trippier? It is delicious! Croatia hit the front, and England are hot.
is the planet's ultimate game. The final of the 21st Football World Cup. Pogba! Here's Mbappe!